Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. We're here to bring you the latest and greatest geeky news of the week. I am your host, Sean Hayes, and this is episode 291 of the 8-Bit Adventures podcast. So apologize if I sound awful. I'm feeling a little under the weather, which is, and the weather is not great out right now anyway. So if I sound a little husky, that's why. Just fighting some seasonal cold type stuff. Not COVID, thankfully, but, I may need to use, the mute button a bit, during this episode. So, hope everyone's doing well. There was, you know, a couple news items out this week. There was a lot more like Magic the Gathering news than video game news. It seems like a lot of the big stuff was last week with the, you know, Microsoft Activision deal and things like that. But we've got some stuff in here. So, yeah. Why don't we get right into it? Let you know, instead of listening to me talk, let's get right into this week's news. So first up, The Verge reports that roughly 50% of staff at the indie music platform Bandcamp were effectively laid off as part of the company's sale to SongTrader. So Bandcamp was formerly owned by Epic, and then sold to SongTrader as Epic having some sort of a downturn. I'm sure there are various lawsuits and cases like with Apple, say, didn't have anything to do with it. So Bandcamp was sold to SongTrader as part of that divestiture. SongTrader has not voluntarily recognized Bandcamp's unionization efforts at the time of recording. Employees who were not extended offers from SongTrader will be eligible for severance, according to a statement by Epic. So it's not that they were like explicitly laid off. It's just that when SongTrader bought Bandcamp, they only extended job offers to about 50% of the staff. This is, of course, in light of, I think a few weeks ago, Epic laid off like 18% of its workforce, which amounted to like 800 people. So, yeah. Layoff's not great. And hopefully SongTrader will, you know, go along with the unionization efforts. So, and that hopefully, you know, again, I've been really hammering down this unionization point. It feels like over the past year, hopefully we see more and more both tech and games industry jobs go that route. I mean, if not all industries, but, you know. You know, best of luck to everybody that got laid off. You know, it's not great. I've been there a few times myself. And especially in this economy, it's not great. So, all right. Next up. The Verge reports that Bethesda's head of publishing, Pete Hines, is retiring. Hines has been with Bethesda since 1999, when he joined as Senior Vice President of Global Marketing and Communications. He is best known as sort of being the sort of public face for the Fallout series. Definitely a veteran of the industry, been with Bethesda for 24 years. That's quite a long time. He'd only been in the head of publishing role for a year. So he took that role last year. So I don't know. Maybe after being the head of it all, he finally said, I'm good. I'm done. So yeah. Not quite sure what this is going to mean for Bethesda, who's going to take up the mantle. But we'll have to see. Next up, Polygon reports that Darrington Press's Illuminated Worlds tabletop RPG, Candela Obscura, will be released on November 14th. The game features a Victorian Gothic horror setting known as the Fairlands, and the players are members of a secret society that investigates strange occurrences, dangerous magic, and sort of otherworldly corruption that's bleeding into our world. Darrington Press's parent company, Critical Role, has both a how-to play video and an actual play series, for those that are not aware of that, that showcases how the game is played. There are also quick start rules that are available for free from the Darrington Press website, I believe. So it's like a quick PDF. I did watch the how-to play video. Kind of seems similar to in the same vein as like a Powered by the Apocalypse type game, where you have a role and that role has a specialty. Each one gives you special actions that you can take. There are a bunch of base actions. Unlike Powered by the Apocalypse, is you build a dice pool of six-sided dice based on your rating. So in that respect, it's a little bit like a White Wolf type game where you're like sort of like counting up how many dice you have. And then you also have points in various actions. So like you don't have stats like you do in White Wolf or in Powered by the Apocalypse. It's you kind of just put points into specific actions that you take. And that determines how many dice you roll. And then it's the result of the dice, which determines whether it's, or the result of the die of your choice that determines success or failure. There's like spendable points that you can have in various actions. You can spend those to get more dice for a particular dice pool. And if you have like a little check mark next to a given action, one of your dice becomes gilded, quote unquote, which just means it's just a special D6. Where if you pick that result, you get a point back in that action. So that's a little interesting. And then they have sort of a three strikes method for sort of taking, I don't want to say damage, but like injuries, I guess. So like you can get sort of hit three times with a various effect and a various thing, like body, mind, magic, before you get a scar, which then affects some of your actions. And then if you get three scars and you would get another one, you're out. You're permanently incapacitated in some way. So, the book will have two versions, a standard hardcover for $40 and a limited edition hardcover for $60. The limited edition will have sort of a faux leather finish, with some embossing and, drawing a blank on the term for it, but basically some like inlay on it, to sort of give it like a sort of gilded look to it. So yeah, November 14th for that, for folks who are looking for, you know, a bit more of an investigative, style of play. But again, like if you've played a Powered by the Apocalypse game, you can look at that, and then sort of be like, okay, you know, I see this. Yeah. Like, I can see inspirations from that style of play. So. Next up, IGN reports that some of the cards and mechanics from the upcoming Fallout Commander decks for Magic the Gathering were revealed. The four decks, so it'll be a four-deck set similar to previous Universes Beyond Commander sets, like Warhammer, 40K, Doctor Who, the Lord of the Rings decks. But the four decks will be the following. So the first will feature Dogmeat from, I don't know, I'm not super familiar with Fallout, so please forgive me. I think Dogmeat was in the one that featured Boston. I don't remember what it was called. But Dogmeat will be a Naya deck, which is red, green, and white, revolving around auras, equipment, and junk tokens. So look, like Dogmeat basically has an ability where you send him out, and then he goes and brings stuff back to you, which I thought was funny. Caesar, Legion's Emperor, in a Mardu deck, so red, white, and black, revolving around token generation, namely sacrificing creatures to generate either soldier tokens or dealing damage based on tokens. Dr. Madison Lee in a Jeskai deck, so red, white, and blue. Very, very thematic. Focusing on energy counters and doing stuff with energy counters. So, been a while since we've seen energy counters in Magic the Gathering, but folks who are a fan of that mechanic will be overjoyed with this deck. And then the Wise Mothman in a Sultai, so which is green, black, and blue. Mutant deck that goal seems to be to proliferate rad counters, and I'm gonna go over like what junk tokens and rad counters are. So junk tokens from the Dogmeat deck, and I think they show up elsewhere too, are it's an artifact token that lets you tap and sacrifice it to exile the top card of your library as a sorcery. And then you can play that card, you know, until the end of your turn. So, very, very red flavored mechanic. And then for the rad counters, so there's like a radiation emblem helper card. I don't really know what it counts as. That basically gives you the rules for rad counters. So if you have any rad counters at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, you mill that many cards, and then you lose one life and a rad counter for each non-land card you mill. Okay? So for those who don't know anything about Magic and are just like, why is he speaking in tongues? So basically, in Magic, you have a combat phase, and then before and after that, you have a phase in which, like, you get to play cards. So that's your pre-combat main phase. So at the start of that, if you have any rad counters, you take that many cards off the top of your deck, you discard them, and then any cards that aren't land cards, you get rid of a rad counter that you have, and you lose one life. So, I think this is an interesting sort of take on it. I was kind of thinking that it might have just been an infect mechanic, but I know everybody hates poison counters, so I think this is an interesting way of introducing like a poison-like mechanic without it being oppressive, like poison counters are. Because with poison counters, if you accumulate 10, you just lose. So yeah, I think it's an interesting mechanic. I don't know how great it will be in play. Generally, forcing opponents to mill cards is a risky strategy, because if you're playing against a deck that like a reanimator archetype, where you take cards from your discard pile and you put them directly into play, usually for a cheaper cost than just playing the card, you know, not great to just put cards into their graveyard. You know, I know there's a commander from the D&D set, which would love getting rad counters, because that means they get to just run into dungeons all the time. So we'll have to see. But I wanted to particularly note three cards that are going to be in this that were revealed. So two of them are new and one of them is not. So the one that's not is Crucible of Worlds. It's a really good card in certain deck archetypes, which is you can play lands from your graveyard. So, yeah, this combined with rad counters means that, like, you put all those lands in your graveyard, and now you can just play them instead of, you know, having to do some sort of recursion. So that's great. I'm sure, you know, reprint for that will be nice. And then the two new cards, Rad Storm, which I'm sure will be in the Wise Mothman deck. So for three colorless and a blue, it's an instant. And it just has two words on it, Storm and Proliferate. Storm, very divisive mechanic. Kind of surprised that they put it in. So Storm is basically for each other spell that you cast that turn, you copy this spell. Proliferate is, you know, for everything in play, including players, that have a counter of some sort, you may put another one of those counters on it. You know, like, say, rad counters. And that's it. That's the card. So I think that's pretty interesting. I could see that becoming, you know, a decent option for poison deck, you know, Proliferate decks that were already in existence that were running poison that had blue. You know, I could see it in some sort of, you know, Simic +1/+1 counter decks. So yeah, Storm's are really, it's a busted mechanic. And I think the fact that it's just Proliferate, you know, and it costs four, you know, I think this is going to be a great card. But, you know, I think it's also kind of some protections were put against it to make it not super broken. That said, I think once it hits, yeah, we're going to see all sorts of nonsense with poison, I think, for some sort of niche meme deck with that. All right, so Nuka-Cola Vending Machine is the last card that I wanted to highlight. This one, for food-based decks, this is bonkers. So it costs three. It's an artifact. You can pay one, tap it, create a food. Very standard. You know, great for food generation. Easy peasy. Here's where it gets bonkers, is whenever you sacrifice a food, create a tapped treasure. So food in Magic is you pay two, you sacrifice the food, you tap, sacrifice the food, and you gain three life. Not great in and of itself, but there are a lot of cards that synergize with having food or using food to do other things. Treasure is you tap it and sacrifice it to add a mana of any color. Treasure tokens, absolutely fantastic resource to have. And there's certain cards that already have a lot of synergy with, like, in particular, food and treasure tokens. So the fact that it's whenever you're doing a thing, and it's not necessarily that whenever you sacrifice a food to gain life, it's just whenever you sacrifice it. So there are a number of deck archetypes that this will be fantastic in, especially for those that got the sort of Hobbits of the Food and Fellowship commander deck from Lord of the Rings. This will go great in it. Super excited about that. You know, I don't think I'm going to get any of these decks, but I might buy that as a single card. Because that's awesome. and then I can use it for my Hobbit deck to commit more war crimes. So, all right. That covers that. In further Magic the Gathering news, Polygon reports that Wizards of the Coast will be consolidating Magic the Gathering draft boosters and set boosters into one product called Play Boosters in 2024. This change will begin with the Murders at Karlov Manor set. The price will match the cost of a set booster, which is the more expensive of the two, and contain the following. So it'll have 6 slots for commons, 1 slot for either a common card or a card from the list, which is like a reprint. It's like a special reprint set list. I don't know. Wizards maintains like a list, quote unquote, of older cards that like they want to throw back into play. So from that, 2 slots for uncommons, 1 slot for a rare or mythic rare, 1 slot for a basic land, 1 slot for a non-foil wild card, 1 slot for a foil wild card, and then 1 slot for, you know, your general junk stuff. So an add, a token, a helper card, or an art card. Note that all of these in the document had something noted as like qualifies for booster fun, which I don't know if that means like alt art treatment or something. It was noted that a pack can have up to 4 rare/mythics in it. So Wizards is hoping this will reduce the burden of carrying multiple SKUs on local game stores. So that was a common complaint, is that, you know, if like set boosters sold a lot better, because set boosters were more geared towards collectors and people who weren't playing limited. So people who were playing Commander, whatever constructed formats. That people are still playing, like maybe Modern, Pioneer. Whereas draft boosters were just for people playing like Draft or Sealed. Which, you know, tended to be, at least around here, the bigger tournament presence. But, you know, if you wanted to just go in to the store and just buy booster packs, generally, you were looking at buying set boosters and not draft boosters. Longtime players, such as myself, will note that the game has only had like 2 different kinds of boosters for only a few years. So, like back when I first started playing, there was just booster packs. So the fact that like there's been draft boosters and set boosters has been very confusing for me. So the fact that they're going to consolidate them, you know, the higher price point, I think set boosters are $1 more a pack, maybe $2 more a pack. So, you know, the price of playing in limited will go up. How much it goes up, whether it's just a nominal amount or a significant amount, may depend on the store. But I know for a fact that, one of our local stores, at least, so Purple Dragon before it closed, you know, the owner, Nico, had mentioned draft boosters, had a very difficult time trying to gauge how many to buy, because, outside of using them to run tournaments, like they never sold. Whereas set boosters very consistently sold. And so it was much easier to gauge that. So, I also think consolidating SKUs is good. You know, don't make things super complicated for customers. You know, obviously, you know, increase in price hikes, not great for consumers. But, you know, we'll have to see if this ends up being a net positive or not. I think one of the justifications that Wizards has was because there's going to be more stuff in there than they were for draft boosters, and you're going to get more value out of it, that it'll be worth the extra cost. We'll see. I mean, they say that, but at the same time, there's a lot of garbage rares. So, you know, yeah, we'll have to see if this ends up being a net positive. But, you know, price increase aside, which, to be clear, it's technically only a price increase if you are looking at it from a limited perspective. If you're like me, you know, and you kind of just only play Commander at this point, like I did one draft for like the Lord of the Rings, or one sealed event for Lord of the Rings. And I haven't since then, just because, you know, it's quite different from, you know, spending some money here and there to augment Commander decks, and then it is to like every week show up and pay like $35 to do a draft tournament. So, yeah, I mean, if you're coming from my perspective, then the price hasn't gone up, and now it just means there's a consolidated product. So I guess in my case, it's a positive. But understandably, if you're someone that regularly plays limited, you know, prices going up is not great. You know, we've certainly had enough of that for everything across the board since the pandemic. So we'll have to see. But yeah, so whenever Murders at Karloff Manor comes out in 2024 is when we'll see this changeover. Next up, Polygon reports that the Van Gogh Museum will no longer offer a special Pikachu promo that ties in with its Pokemon exhibit due to safety concerns. So, yeah, they're doing a special, it's like a Pokemon exhibit where it has like Van Gogh pieces recreated with like Pokemon, either in them, adjacent, sort of a thing. Neat exhibit idea. And glad that, like fine arts museums are kind of meshing with pop culture like this. Yeah. Pokemon kind of showcase, like, for those who have been, like, absolutely distraught over the lack of product for Lorcana, like, this is what happened. You take that level of demand and you scale it up like to 1,000. Because like people, and the weird thing is, like, most people don't even play Pokemon. The trading card game. Like, it's all collectors. Scalpers and like diehard fans ransacked the gift shop, and I watched a video clip of it, and it was absolute madness. Like, I cannot even, it was people absolutely jam-packed in there. It's in like a museum gift shop, okay? Not very big, not exactly designed to, you know, have like hordes of people descend upon it. So it was just like people absolutely stuffed in there, like climbing over each other to get like prints, promo cards, you know, this promo card and things like that. It's like, come on. And the only thing I could think of is when you hear about, you know, the stereotypical like Black Friday Walmart doorbuster sale where employees get trampled and crushed. That is what this looked like. And again, at a fine arts museum. So the museum said the card will be made available for purchase at the Pokemon Center online store in the near future. And also at participating Dutch retailers. But will never again be available at the museum. Understandably, they were like, we do not want this. Like, this is a safety concern. Like, we are not equipped for this. No, we're not doing this. And, you know, it. I'm a little surprised that the Pokemon Company hasn't kind of made a bit of a stronger statement about it. Because this does not reflect well on the card game. Like, it looks bad when you have people sort of clamoring over a promo card like this. I mean, it was absolute anarchy. Embarrassing is one word I would describe as far as the behavior. So, and also the promo card is Pikachu with a gray hat. And here's the thing: it was people getting it to then resell it, you know, for thousands of dollars. Again, for cardboard, folks. And that's the thing, you know, for people who are then not going to play the game. So just let that sink in for a little bit. And then we're going to move on to our next topic. It's a little bit of a palate cleanser. We're going to move on to our next topic. Super Mario Brothers Wonder. Mario's Next Adventure is now out. You can buy it. It's available. Looks like pretty widely reviewing very well. I don't think this comes as a surprise to anybody. But I just have a couple of notes here. Ars Technica notes the game is like, quote, somebody at Nintendo asked, what if we made a game where every level was like the infamous Super Mario World 2 Yoshi's Island level, touch fuzzy, get dizzy? And that is wild that we went from. So like that level came out, back when Super Mario World 2 was released. And the idea behind that level is like, it's kind of a normal platforming level and everything. And it's like very early in the game. And there are these like puff-like creatures that float around. And if you touch one, it doesn't deal damage to you. It doesn't cause you to lose Baby Mario or anything. It just, it makes everything trippy. And so, a lot of, censorship groups were like, this is a very clearly coded sort of hallucinogenic thing here. This ain't great. And so Nintendo, like in future iterations, has like scaled it back. So for them to do a whole game that's sort of, not quite like psychedelic, but just on that level of weird things are happening is fantastic. It's great. I also read some reviews from Game Informer and IGN, both reviewed very well, praising the creative wonder effects that just like completely changed the gameplay on its head. Things like a very nominal ways of, it might change like the way in which you play through the level. So instead of being like scrolling to the right, it might like scroll in a different direction. Obviously we saw in the trailers and stuff like the weird bendy caterpillar pipes and things like that, just the elephant power up. But also the badges. So there are like unlockable and equipable badges that when you equip it, like, gives you a new gameplay mechanic. So things like a crouch jump, or there's apparently like a piranha plant grappling hook type thing to let you climb, like stick to walls. So like Mario gets a hook shot. There's some item which lets you change your change the trajectory of your jumps midair. So that all, like, that sounds great, and that sounds exactly like what you would include like in a Mario game to keep freshening things up. So I haven't played it myself yet. Budgets are a little tight. Can't really justify the $60 price tag at the moment. But I'm looking forward to it. So my hope is maybe holiday season, someone picks it up for me for Christmas, maybe. But I'm very excited for it. I love Mario games, Mario platformers in particular. And I'm glad to see that this one is reviewing pretty well. So yeah, hope those of you out there who are interested in it, get your hands on it and give it a play. Let me know how it goes. You know, I love to hear people, especially if they're excited about something, you know, if they're excited about Super Mario Brothers Wonder. So one criticism is online co-op play is a bit limited. So if you want to do some like actual co-op play, you got to do couch co-op. This is probably not a shock to anybody who's been following Nintendo for a number of years, but yeah, I mean, couch co-op is how you kind of have to do Nintendo co-op multiplayer. So, because it's like pretty limited online. So, all right, that is going to wrap things up for this week. Thank you all for joining me. If you want to see more stuff from 8-Bit Adventures, check out 8bitadventures.com. If you want to help support that content, you can become a patron over at patreon.com/8bitadventures. You can become a patron for as little as $1 a month. And that helps out sort of all of the facets of 8-Bit Adventures, from like the podcast to the comics, streams, and all that stuff. And that is the best way to support these endeavors. Big shout out and thank you to all of the current patrons out there. Thank you for your continued support. The opening theme to this podcast is One Up by Professor Shy Guy. You can find his work over at professorshyguy.bandcamp.com. So with that, hope you all have a wonderful week. And as always, have fun. Happy gaming, and enjoy your pie cake.